As you have been hearing throughout the morning, former US President Donald Trump has said that FBI agents raided his Mar-a-Lago estate last night and broke into his safe. Trump is facing several investigations stemming from his time in office and in private business, one of which relates to the removal of official presidential records from the White House to his Florida resort. The US Justice Department has declined to comment, but former President Trump has described a raid involving a large group of FBI agents and said last night that his Mar-a-Lago estate was under siege and occupied. I'm joined by Marion McKeown, US correspondent for the Business Post. What do we know, Marion?
Well, what we know is that the FBI went in yesterday morning, Monday morning, and with a warrant which had to be approved. You know, I think that what we know from this is that it's serious. There is no way that this warrant was approved by the head of the FBI, Christopher Wray, who is a Trump appointee, and also by the Attorney General Merrick Garland, who is a notoriously conservative by the books Attorney General, and also a Florida federal judge who agreed, who signed off on the warrant, that these separate groups, the executive and the judiciary, came together and agreed that a warrant was acceptable and was necessary, suggests that certainly there was a sense that there was a high probability that a crime had been committed or that evidence was about to be destroyed or gotten rid of in some way or other.
Indeed, because so the pretext for going in is that there are National Archives 15 boxes which were taken from the White House that should never have been taken. But we also know, separate to that, that the Justice Department, was confirmed in a New York Times story last week, wasn't it, is conducting an investigation of Trump. So this is not about returning records to the National Archives.
Well, we don't know, Philip. Now, I think I was told that Donald Trump had, in fact, returned the 15 boxes were picked up. The 15 boxes in question were picked up, I think it was February the 9th, and taken back to Washington. Now, there could be something here that when they opened the boxes, they found that not everything was in it, and that's going to tick them off. And that in itself is a pretty serious offence for a president. The Presidential Records Act was introduced in 1978 after Nixon, and it allows for up to 3 years in prison and also a permanent disqualification against running for office again. And I think that's one of the key things here. If a president is found guilty of mishandling, keeping, stashing, papering his walls, giving away his gifts, or making paper airplanes out of anything that he touches while he's in the White House. So there has been a lot of speculation here. What did he try to keep? Was it Kim Jong-un's love letters? Was it some, you know, who knows? But it seems that if the National Archives went through and they had a list of all the things they wanted and they weren't all there, then Trump is having negotiated with them to return the boxes. He's in trouble. He's in trouble, and that would be enough on its own to spark. But I think,
well, we've said this so many times before about Trump being in trouble, and I would imagine to his supporters that something like this plays a little bit like getting Al Capone for tax evasion. I mean, missing documents?
Yeah, and you know, but I think here is the thing, that if these warrants, and I'm sure they were correctly signed off on and properly executed and everything else, if they had gone into Mar-a-Lago, and apparently they opened the safe and they went through everything, and if they had gone in and found evidence of other crimes, let's say they found something to do with January 6th that was incriminating while they were conducting their search. Well, that is legitimate. If the warrant was badly executed, then it's fruit of the poison tree, as they say in legal circles. It's all out. So I don't know if that's part of it.
Okay.
We don't know at the moment if it is just that they are. The story that has come out now has been that it is about the archives. But I say let's wait and see. Merrick Garland is really, really tight-lipped, and I think correctly so. And so is Chris Wray from the FBI. So I should just say that I've received so many spluttering outrage emails. Marjorie Taylor Greene was the first one I got an email from, offering to be interviewed, no less, about her fury and the need to rid this nation of its socialist reign of terror. Matt Schlapp from CPAC as well. There's such a hysteria over this already. Kevin McCarthy saying to Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, basically keep your notes and clear your calendar, which, you know, is really a threat from the disproportionate response to what could be, as I say, a routine, it's never routine when it's a former president, but a warrant looking for stuff that Donald Trump may have kept in defiance of the president.
Okay, you would expect that kind of a response from those kind of individuals. What's going on elsewhere within the Republican Party? Do you think that support, that power is ebbing away from Trump?
I really don't know, Philip, because you can never say never with Donald Trump. Now, if you take the CPAC jamboree in Texas at the weekend, I mean, the Republican Party is now the party of Trump. And I think that the Republican Party that you would think of as the Mitch McConnells and these people who are conservative Republicans is now the fringe. And the Republican Party has moved wholly to the right. It really is the party of Trump now. And I think that the CPAC conference at the weekend, which used to be a gathering where people just praised Ronald Reagan for most of its natural existence.
CPAC is Conservative Political Action Committee.
Conference, that's right, yeah. And it's held twice a year. Now, I've been attending them for years and years. The most recent one, the guest of honour was Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary, who got a standing ovation and whose manifesto, whose platform sounded exactly like the one that Donald Trump followed with on Saturday night. Now, it seems from the polls that were taken there that should Donald Trump decide to run, he will likely be the candidate. But whether or not he decides to run and whether or not something happens in the interim which prevents him running, we don't know. And I sort of feel that, 2024 is still a long way away. And of course, Trump at the moment is loving the attention. He's loving the fundraising capabilities it's giving him. So I think in a way, it's probably better to park that one. I think the Republicans should be focused more on the midterms at the moment, notwithstanding the flurry of outrage, as I said, over the Mar-a-Lago raid.
Okay. Over on the other side of the aisle, meanwhile, Joe Biden's domestic agenda has received a major shot in the arm. In particular, the $370 billion that has now been allocated to climate action. Environmentalists are saying that this is like a Pearl Harbor moment, the United States finally joining the war on climate action.
I think that is a fair enough assessment, really, because they've been talking about it and talking about it. This is really it's the skinny version. It's now called the Inflation Reduction Act. It's the skinny version of Build Back Better. You could, in fact, say it's Build Back Smaller, but it is what got over the line, and it's significant. It's in total about $740 billion worth of Democratic priorities, and getting these over the line at this point before the midterms, it really is a significant victory. I think that with regard to the climate change provisions, it's about $370 billion over the next decade. Now, some of this will go to a lot of it will be tax rebates. It'll be investment, encouraging investments. It'll be encouraging ordinary householders to get more environmentally friendly heating in. It'll be giving them tax credits for buying electric cars, that kind of thing. So there's sort of a bit of something for everyone in the audience. But I think the main thing is that quite recently the Democrats were really upset about a poll which suggested that 94% of people under the age of 30 did not want Biden to run again. They were the people who voted for him in large numbers because they believed in his climate change promises. And they were just so disillusioned. So I think this will help to put a bit of a pep in the step of people who really felt that Biden just wasn't delivering, that this whole thing had come tumbling down. And it's also showing, he's had, I say this so many times, so the worst thing about the Democrats is their messaging. They managed to make every victory seem like some kind of they never really put, you know, relate to the American public the significance of what they've achieved. So Biden's, for example, his American Jobs Act, his Infrastructure Act, the CHIPS Act, which he passed recently, which will really boost the business and the manufacturing of semiconductors and chips in America. You also had, of course, the taking out of the killing of Ahmad al-Zawahiri last week. He's had a lot of victories in the last couple of weeks after having a dismal couple of months. But for some reason, it doesn't seem to really connect with people as much who are still talking about the price of gas, the price of petrol, and inflation. The other big thing in the bill is prescription drug costs, that finally the government will be allowed to negotiate the price of drugs for Medicare patients. That's patients over the age of 65. And you wonder why this has been blocked for so long. Another thing that they've done is, which will be popular, is they've put a cap of $35 on the price of insulin. Now, that'll only be for older people, and they're going to try and push that through again for everyone, which would be hugely popular because diabetes is a massive problem in America. So I think that their sort of health insurance is going to be better. And they've also done something they've been talking about for ages. Democrats are always talking about tax the rich, and they are now putting a 15% tax on corporations, minimum tax, to make sure that every corporation in America pays some form of tax. So I think that these are things that they have been talking about. There was also, of course, the bipartisan gun legislation. It didn't achieve a whole lot, but then there was the burn pits legislation as well for veterans, and of course the approving of Finland and Sweden into NATO. So when you put all of these things together, it does seem that Biden is getting things done. They're not big attention grabbers. He's not a great attention grabbing president. He doesn't have the world's greatest communications team, in my view, but things are getting done, and hopefully that will trickle down, or at least they hope it will.
Can I ask you briefly before we go about the conspiracy theorist Alex Jones? Perhaps the single most dramatic thing that I've ever seen happening in a courtroom was him being confronted by the mother of one of the victims at Sandy Hook, Scarlett Lewis, who told him some home truths about telling the truth and the fact that our reality is based on truth and that you cannot just keep on doing what you're doing. And he shuffled and he looked at his feet and he looked at his hands and he talked to his lawyer, and he really seemed more uncomfortable than we've ever seen Alex Jones looking. But in the wake of that verdict, in the wake of him being punished or admonished by the court, is it perhaps the case that he has been chastised but not chastened? Because he's been out now, hasn't he, disputing the basis of the entire legal action against him?
Absolutely. And he's also doing this thing that he's being persecuted, etc. Now, as you say, it was a riveting trial to watch. And I certainly found Mark Branston, who was the lawyer for Neil Heslin and Scarlett Lewis, the parents who were suing him, who wanted $150 million in damages. They got some $49 million, I believe, which is a really significant victory. And of course, there are more defamation cases coming down the pipe for Alex Jones. But yes, I to watch him, you could actually see him sweating while he was being examined for 40 minutes by Mark Branston. And as you say, while Scarlett Lewis was directly confronting him, he did seem extremely uncomfortable. But look, there is money in Alex Jones's version of reality. He makes $800,000 a day from his online store, from the InfoWars online store alone, $300 million a year. He's not going to change what he's doing because it's too profitable for him to keep doing what he's doing. Yes, he did have to admit that what he said about Sandy Hook was a lie and that it did actually happen. But the cruelty with which he treated those parents who had just lost 6 and 7 year old children, the cynicism of it. And it, you know, I don't think that there's any money that can really compensate for that.
No, they got their day in court, and I know they seemed very satisfied by that. But I wonder, when you are dealing with people who are not chastened by being punished to the tune of nearly $50 million and humiliated on an international stage, that they just continue business as usual, is there any way of dealing with the Alex Joneses of this world?
Very little other than what they're doing. And as you know, here in the States, it's actually very difficult to win a defamation act because of the First Amendment and the premium that's put on the right to free speech. Now, $50 million for Alex Jones is what? It's 2 months' salary. And he's been doing this for a long time. So I suspect that he sees this as the cost of doing business. Unfortunately, I don't think it will stop him doing something equally cruel, equally disingenuous, equally outright dishonest in future, because he knows that's where the money is, that there is a whole lot of money to be made in his alternative reality universe where there are conspiracy theories, etc. I think one of the interesting side issues of this, of course, is that his lawyer, who had a really terrible week, Federico Andino Real, who inadvertently sent all of Alex Jones's text messages, 2 years worth, to the other side, they are now handing those over to the January 6th committee. They've already done so, in fact. And it does seem that Alex Jones, as we know, was there on January 6th. He was whipping the whole thing up on his shows beforehand. And I think that there may be something of interest for the January 6th committee. So, you never know where this will end. I mean, you start off in one courtroom, you may very well end up in another. So we'll have to wait. Watch that space, I'd say.
Indeed. Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business Post. Thank you very much.